This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Here we sit on the afternoon of the last afternoon of 2015. What better way to do it than to sit here with my buddies? It's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 375. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Kevin Whirlwind X in outside, actually farther north than I thought of from Toronto area. You're like way up there, and you got all those lakes around you and stuff. You look like you're in a very cool
See
zone.
See what I mean?
State
He's
parks
in farmland.
And stuff.
What?
And,
this is gonna be dangerous. I'm gonna have to move again.
Look like parks and cool woods and stuff. And then Phil in Ottawa and Andrew the LA Rabbit.
Fuck Ottawa.
In Minnesota. No, in LA.
Fucking Ottawa got 40 centimeters, so fuck them.
I don't want to hear about your how you fall short or rank yourself. I don't want to hear any dick waving from Ottawa about your centimeters. We don't use your decimal based system.
It's the best system.
So you got over 13 feet, Phil?
Don't confuse me with math, Kevin.
So this is the podcast sponsored by nobody. We are the Marvel Noise guys and Phil, who sometimes does both. And this is our opportunity to talk about some of the indie noise books we've been reading. And our show is not very consistent as far as when it comes out, but when it does, gosh, we put so much love into it.
Yeah, it comes out whenever you guys are done finger-banging Marvel for an hour.
Hey, we got to keep that.
Steve's like, let's get an episode out before Christmas. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And then he's like, oh, I'm too busy.
That's what I said before the end of the year. You can go back and listen to the tape. I said before the end of the year. And
it's
technically
true.
We're podcasting. There's only
Steve's
hours
still
left.
Right.
There's hours left in the year. But you won't hear this until the new year, but we're recording it before the end of the new year.
Well, I'm glad we don't have any European correspondence or we'd be right out of luck with our new year promise.
Andrew, what have you been reading?
Whoa, jumping right to me.
Yes,
well,
I am.
I thought I'd cut back to something I haven't talked about in a while, and that's Kickstarter.
Ah, that's very interesting because I have a Kickstarter project to mention as well.
I think I kind of never mentioned the first one, but they're on the second volume, and it's a Torso Bear from Toyberg Press. And this is volume two. And they're actually Torso Bear.
Torso, like the torso of a person?
Yes. And then bear, like
the bear of a person.
We had our guest Billy Z of Comic Book Bears.
Who is a bear of a person?
Sorry, friend, not guest. So basically this is from across the pond, and this is the second volume. I back both. And what it is it's noir. This is an anthology of noir style stories, but told from the perspective of toys. But it's legit noir, as in like unhappy endings and the sort of grim fatalism that marks that genre. Like the opening tale is this police officer who kind of bended the law but spent his whole life in pursuit of justice. You know, and sacrificed everything, and then he gets set up. So Ruxby Bear, he's also on the cover. And so this whole world is created by Brett Uren. U-R-E-N. Uren? And so this one is an anthology, and it's just all different stories and all different tales. And I really like that they play this pretty close to the original model. You know what I mean? There's some triumph, but generally they're all kind of those sort of grim stories about police and private investigators and things generally not working out. And it's just kind of a fun. Yeah, so the cop bear gets sent to prison. And it doesn't go too well, as you can imagine. But then there's stories about like an army soldier coming back, and he's got, you know, PTSD, and he has an addiction to molasses, and so he's trying to, you know, get his life together. So it's all those tropes, but just tied up into the world of toys and stuffed animals and everything. And the cool thing about the anthology is you get all kinds of different styles and everything, but it's super polished and pro. Like, you would see this and think it could have come out from any of the regular Diamond publishers. You know what I mean? It's a full color and everything, so there's nothing about this that would necessarily ward you off if you were normally shy about some of the more indie stuff. The only thing that might shy you off is there's no Marvel or DC logo on it, or Boom or any of them other ones.
But it's high production quality.
Yeah. I mean, there is, like, hey, one of the stories.
Only the best for Torso Bear.
By Janos Hongkonen and Carlos Zamudio. It's like black and white with a little bit of those color splashes. And I really like that. I mean, I don't know if you guys consider that black and white or what, but it's 99% black and white with a little bit of red and blue for certain characters, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I always like that highlight.
Yeah.
That's like Sin City.
Yeah. Oh boy.
In fact, the back blurb has a Imagine Frank Miller Sin City and color it with the crayons from a third grader school box.
Nice. Kevin, you win.
Yeah. Just throw some of those cranberries on the page for blood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's fun. Fun stuff. But anyways, this is the second volume. If they have a third volume, I'm definitely going to be backing it. I'm pretty sure there's a digital copy, so you don't have to take a bath on the international shipping. But they did a little sketch in mine. I got a Judge Dredd as a stuffed animal.
Nice.
That's cool. The convict number and everything. Yeah, it was just the first time I actually won like a page of art from the book. It's pretty amazing. And I was like, wow, they have to ship that all the way from jolly old England. Got a little mangled in the post office. Thank you, post office, by the way, for like folding and spindling and mutilating every piece of mail I get. I mean, I know they work hard and everything, but it is, I mean, I'm not a big condition snob, luckily, but it just is so sad sometimes when you look in the mailbox and they've just bent and twisted and done everything to it. Yeah. But the back has a bunch of pinups too.
It's not trendy to go postal anymore, so now they got to take it out on the mail, you know?
Yeah, like I said, they generally do a good job. It's just such a heartbreak when you get out and something's, you know, the corners are all jammed, or especially comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck you, postman.
I love my mail carrier.
I hate mine because they put boxes, like, way down the road that we have to go to now and unlock. Like, they don't even come to our door in Canada anymore. It's ridiculous.
They deliver mail right to your house.
It's all those
senators. Not anymore. Not in Ottawa. Now they have like these boxes set up like every couple blocks. You have to go pick it up. It's stupid.
What about the old people?
That's the way it works the other way around. There's boxes to put the mail in every few blocks.
Well, it's supposed to come to my box at my home. Yeah, fill my box.
Whoa. Yeah,
I'm in a complex, so it's the mailboxes are uniform, so they're just too small for...
You sure?
Comics and everything. Growing up, we had this giant mailbox, so it worked. Except there, everything would be frozen and ruined anyways, but in a different way.
What if you have a front door, but you have a postal box inside of a building? That's always confusing. Go up the hill around the corner. We have a number, but
just text me. Don't even send me anything then.
I agree. Well, they are good about leaving if the package is way too big, but the comics usually are just big enough that if they fold and and tie them in a knot, they can jam them in there.
If we do
hello, postal noise.
An S-fold. Now, I like when you back something on Kickstarter and you get it and check it out or whatever, and it's like, oh, that was good, and then you all of a sudden see it a few months later pop up on Comixology. And that happened to me where I saw Shaman on Comixology, the first issue of at least, and this was a Kickstarter that probably hit a few months ago, and it's I think 5 issues or 6 issues I guess is what I ended up backing and received, and it is written by Ben Kahn and drawn by Bruno Hidalgo. And there's some covers by J.G. Jones and Jim Rugg, among others. And I should mention, too, the colorist is Javi Chaler. And the coloring is really great in the book. It's really cool and quirky, this book. The line work, the pacing, the storytelling overall. I mean, when the storytelling gets weird, it seems like it's eccentric and deliberate, not like a lack of skill. So you want to hang in there and experience it the way it's being presented and feeling like you're getting it the way it's meant to be, not the way the creator fell short of presenting it in some way, you know? And what this guy is it's a world that's filled with superheroes, or as it's described in the first issue when a fellow is asking who the shaman is. This girl, LL, who ends up being the shaman's daughter, says that this is a world of noble heroes and of savage villains, a world where men and women of great power die every day. So the heroes and the villains, as they fight, there's just deaths left and right. And the shaman, he's the one who brings them back. And he responds to a yet unidentified voice or higher power that tells him which beings to bring back from the dead and reanimate. And it's not always necessarily what the people in the world of the living would want to have happen. Like in the first issue, it's a he's bringing back the grandfather of like a legacy hero. So it's like the old version of him. And there's a reason. There's like a, you know, what's that old show that had the guy used to go in, like Quantum Leap-y kind of a thing. There's always like a reason that it's wrong that the person was dead and that they should be brought back, it seems. In one of the issues, he has to bring back a super villainess who was really powerful, and the heroes that put her down are like, whoa, like every person who dies is going to be on your head, and he has to sort of resolve that, but he's supposed to bring her back, and it ends up being that there was foul play involved, like she was killed in captivity by one of the heroes, so she shouldn't have died kind of a thing, and the fact that he's bringing her back ends up bringing light to that crime so that the right ends up being, the wrong ends up being righted in the end in a weird way. It's very cool. And the coloring, there's all these teals and aquas and purples throughout that show the supernatural, very Doctor Strange-y in a lot of fun ways. But this guy is really cool. He's a badass. He's like playing everybody around him perfectly, and he only says like what he needs to say, and he's just cool shit, and it's a really fun read. It would very well be worth checking out the first issue on Comixology. Shaman. At least check it out and look at the examples of what's inside to see what the art looks like. If you get a look at like what the skeleton looks like with the smoke coming out of its eyes and pores and things, it's just a fun looking book, and it turns out to be a fun read too once you delve in.
So did you get like the whole thing and the Comixology is just the first issue?
Yeah, exactly. Which is a neat way to, I think, on the creator's part to get it out there. Like they put out all the material for a trade, and then they've got that material so they can put out those files one at a time on Comixology as single issues. I don't know if they have the funding or even want to actually publish single issues, or if they did. Like I said, I just saw it pop up on the new releases on Comixology and recognized the cover and said, hey, I enjoyed that. You know who the art is looks a little bit like, and I don't mean to offend either artist by saying it's in that family of artists, but it's kind of like a Michael Oeming kind of a artwork. But in some ways, I like it. It's a little bit messier.
That was really offensive, Steve.
Well, it could be like the third time that guy's heard that this week, and like that's the last thing he wants to be compared to, you know?
You're like an Oeming, Allred type of, oh, man, I wish someone would call me Rob Liefeld or Todd McFarlane, or, you know, that would be a little, you know.
This book is, and even the characterization, like the personalities of the people as you're going through it, as I've always said, I'm a hard sell as to actually glomming onto the characters and finding them meaningful. I need some hooks right away. And there's enough here that I'm really become fond of the characters by the time I'm in the middle of the second issue. I'm fully invested.
I can't find my comics.
What?
I had a big stack of comics like Judge Dredd and all those ones, like the new Judge Dredd, and I can't find them.
Oh, I think one of our listeners likes Judge Dredd.
I do.
Oh, maybe I should go then.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
All right. I have something I thought Andrew would have. Maybe he does, from King Bone Press.
I imagine I do have it, and I think all our listeners can have it too. For free?
Yes, I believe it's free. Or at least it was when I got it.
I think if you go to the website, it's still, they have the link to the Dropbox, so I think it's still active.
So this is My Hero by Greg Golem, John Westhoff, and covered by Harry Moyer. The other thing to get me to relate or get into your comic is to do, I guess, riff on concepts or do comics where I'm like, hey, that's cool. Like, when I'm doing my own craziness, I'm like, this seems to be something that I would do. Like, that's always a good way into someone's heart, going, hey, this is a neat one-off type of thing. Or I assume it's a one-off. It seems like it could be more. I don't want to give too much away. It's like 15 pages, but it's one of those...
give something away.
It's no, set I'm, in a world.
Yeah, it's like a superhero's world, but it's
yeah.
I would say it's something like either the Astro City story where like the villain was like, oh, well, I'm gonna do a crime, but then no one knows I did the crime, and but I want people to know I want to be famous. Like it's a riff on an idea like that, or the one where the one from Monkey Brain where the hero died and then like the villain became the hero. So this is one of those type of things where something happens and then the villain's like, oh, well, I'm the one that really knew the hero. Like the heroes really didn't know like who the guy was, because you spend so much time like battling each other, you get to know each other. There's sort of some kind of weird relationship there.
Sounds good.
Yes. So, definitely something I would want to see more of if they're going in that direction. Because it ends a certain way. I'm like, well, you could, you know, do something else, I think.
You know what I want to see more of? The Archie Horror line. Where the fuck is it?
Yeah. It sure has slowed down. And so has the new Archie, too. Has that even been monthly?
Oh, really?
I don't know. I think it's...
I thought it was, but maybe you're right.
I don't think it's keeping up with the solicitations.
Mm-hmm. The first two issues, anyway, came out, but...
Like, I know Archie has, like, a lot of issues, but I don't know if I ever paid attention to if their books were monthly, because it seems like none of their books are monthly.
No, they definitely always had some monthly books, it seemed like. But the thing is, they had a hit. Like, they brought in all these people that didn't like Archie Comics before, and they completely fucked it up by not giving us anything.
It has been a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
They had, like... Sabrina was pretty good for a bit. Now that disappeared.
Isn't that why they had that Kickstarter, so they could produce more stuff?
Did was that successful?
No,
people.
Not.
There was a backlash. I think
they took it down. I think.
Yeah,
because there's
they said they knew they were going to be successful, but they were going to take it down anyways.
Well, I know there's been a couple of issues of the new Jughead. There's been a couple of issues of the new, maybe three, maybe four of the new Archie. But it stands out more that it's starting over with issue one. I noticed that it's not piling up the way that other comics are.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I usually see is, like, the digests and stuff like that. So, like, I guess that comes on a monthly basis, but I never realized if anything... Like, I guess I was... Like, I think Mega Man and, like, Sonic came out monthly, but yeah, anything else, I think, gets repackaged.
Yeah.
But what's keeping that Franco guy so busy?
Right.
He does, like, 500 covers and other books. He's busy.
Yeah, he just did.
He is not a slacker.
Yeah, he just did the cover of that Seduction of the Innocent book, and
yeah.
I also wonder if it seems like he always has.
There's a lot of good artists that do a lot of covers that can still put out issues.
Yeah, he does like 500 covers though. I don't even know if that's exaggeration. Like, it seems like he had a Marvel, DC, and like a Dynamite cover coming out every week for a while.
Plus, and they do Twitter, make a lot of money from covers, I guess.
Sketches and everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he does. I think he does posters for Mondo and a bunch of other.
Yeah. Then he has his other things, like he might do like a Batman issue or a Black Panther issue or whatever.
Did you find your comics, Phil?
No, that was me being sneaky and starting a conversation so I didn't have to.
Oh, I fell right into that. Wow.
I was going to say, Steve, you're reading the... I tried the first issue of Archie, and that was it for me, but you're reading it right along?
No, I did the same, and I picked up a couple of the consecutive issues after that and kind of flipped through them, and, yeah.
You listened to that episode, Steve, though, where Andrew said he wanted Jughead to be, like, a serial killer or something like that?
Yeah, well, he was the first one to go in Afterlife.
Thankfully, Andrew's not in charge of the Archie Company.
No, that was
they'd all be, like, they'd all be hooking.
If I was going to nominate some moments for the year, like that would be one of my favorite like podcast moments for like this year. It was pretty good.
Andrew, got another book?
Sure. How about every once in a while, I take a stab at things, and I know Steve, you've talked a lot about these characters. I haven't cracked the code yet, but I'm sure I will, and this time it was a shot at Doc Savage. Basically, I went back to my LCS, and they're in the process of transitioning to whatever they're going to be, so they had a whole bunch of 50-cent bins.
I don't like the sound of that, Andrew.
What?
I don't like the sound of it either. It didn't sound good from any my perspective of... It sounds like it's going to be one where you have to have pull lists and all that kind of nonsense, and that's not really my bag.
I thought they might become a video game store or something.
Yeah, really.
But as part of my, kind of, I'll throw them a few bucks and grab a few junk comics out of the 50-cent bin as a, what hopefully isn't, but maybe a farewell. And one of them was like, a Doc Savage one-shot, I kind of dig the... Like, he's certainly... All the things that have come after him, I like. But I just... I don't know. I read some of the Marvel Doc... I've read some here and there. I just haven't found the Doc Savage that's going to hook me yet.
Did you read Alan Moore's Tom Strong stuff from America's Best Comics?
Yes.
Did you like that stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good Doc Savage.
Was that similar to Doc Savage? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's written by Alan Moore.
It's him telling his Doc Savage stories. Basically, was what it was.
And that's no knock against this. This is a Dynamite book by David Avalone and Dave Acosta, with colors by Adriano Augusto and letters by Marshall Dillon. And it's a Dynamite book, so it has all that going with it.
Mm.
But one of the other reasons I grabbed it was I like the one shot. And this is their Altered States line, which I guess was them just doing kind of interesting things. So the story is the doc decides to take some psychedelic hallucinogens to try and that the Mayans use to sort of get inside the origin of evil.
I got to read this already. This is fun. This is too funny already.
So he has them strap him down. A Doc Savage, for those of you who don't know, is like the prototype action hero. Like, he's like super strong, super smart, can do everything, like ultra capable. And he has like a whole crew of sidekicks.
Yeah,
Fortress of Solitude and everything. He was a man of bronze.
Yep, he's like a science hero. He's like a science fiction hero in a lot of ways too. He's really so many different genres thrown into one. He's like Indiana Jones and Reed Richards and, all these things.
Did Doc Savage start?
The only thing he...
No, he was a pulp novel.
Pulp. The big element he's probably missing would be the secret identity.
Right.
That's like probably the one trope that he's not. But all the rest of that he's trafficking in. So they strap him down and give him the drug. It intercuts with him as like the savage. He like flashes back to being this caveman monster dude. So what they do is they intersperse the real world with this, his visions. And so when he's interacting with the visions, he's interacting with the real world. So he busts out of his straps and busts out of jail and like beats up his little cronies and is running off. And they have to track him down. And it's basically just them tracking him down. And like I said, he's imagining he's fighting monsters and lizard men, but really it's his buddies he's fighting all the whole time. And then finally they capture him and the drug wears off. And then they ask him, you know, what sort of, how he got it. And then, you know, and he's like, oh, it's exaggerated. And the memories are vivid. I felt terror, confusion, anger. The entire world was my enemy. And then they flash forward and he's foils a robbery. And when he looks up, he's beating the guy to a pulp. Hmm. When he looks up in the his reflection, he sees himself as the savage he was from a month ago. And, yes, that was the funny thing. It was like Doc Savage taking a bunch of drugs. But they also did this with Red Sonja, Vampirella, The Shadow. Just this was the one I saw in the 50-cent bin. The other thing that was funny is, you guys remember I talked about that Man versus Rock
right.
comic? And they have a whole one-page comic in the back of this from that, which I assume is like an advertisement, I guess. I would imagine maybe they paid for it. I don't know. But it was just funny to see them in the back. Maybe they got picked up by Dynamite. I don't think so. But I thought that was a clever ad to put in and put in a, you know, a strip. I think that's the best ad you could do rather than a cover. I think it's better to have, especially if it's like a comic book, because it gives you kind of the feel of the sort of humor and how the book goes. I thought that was better than just splashing a big...
The oncologist, radiologist who's local, who's going to be the person who radiates my benign, non-life-threatening brain tumor is named Savage. So I have a Doc Savage. I should maybe pick up this issue and bring it to him at my next consultation.
Yeah, just make sure they don't give him this Mayan psychedelic drug.
No, but I figured who better to radiate someone's brain
than the science here. But yeah, the problem is, and I always hate singling out, but the art. Well, the other thing is, he doesn't really look like the Man of Bronze. He looks like a regular dude, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I always like it when they kind of exaggerate that.
Make his hair look like a helmet.
Yeah. Or at least make him look tan or something. Not the same color as everybody else, but maybe that wasn't canon. I don't know enough about Doc Strange.
Reasoning behind him being called the Man of Bronze?
Because he normally looks, like on the cover, the Philip Tan cover, he's that way. He's like...
Like that's the only reason why it's just crazy.
Yeah, there's a whole thing of... did you ever read... You read Planetary? The... Yep. Warren Ellis.
Yeah, I love
that storyline in the jungle of the white man who was there and left as a baby and ended up growing up in like the sophisticated like civilization within the middle of the jungle and marrying the priestess from there and everything. That was all their take on doing Doc Savage.
Okay, also, I never even realized that. Yeah, I didn't know that was him.
And
like everyone, even if you haven't read him, you're familiar with he's the ultimate science hero adventurer. He's like where that all came from. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like rich and super competent in everything and has a whole crew of toadies around and everything.
I know his name well, but I've never seen or read anything about Doc Savage.
Andrew, I've never really come across like great Doc Savage comics, but I haven't really read them all. So if listeners have, shoot us a line at Indie Comic Book
N. Good idea.
because I would like to be steered. You know what? I've actually never read, although I have paged through as a youngster, but at that time wasn't probably as interested in the material, even like the black and white Marvel Max from the 70s that were Doc Savage.
I have a few of the color comics that came out from Marvel with him. I think there were three or four. It was a very short
run. DC had a Batman versus Doc Savage one.
Yeah, everyone's had the license at one point or another.
Yeah.
It's funny. Hey, I read a new release that combines an older digital release with some other material and finally comes into print. Talked before about something that was in print that went to digital, but now it's something digital that goes into print, is from my man, Richard Sala. There's a new Richard Sala book out. There's a new book out. And it is Violenzia and Other Deadly Amusements. And it includes the 48-page Violenzia digital comic that was on Comixology last year. And combines it with a 26-page, like, sepia, like, plated story with text along with it that's called Forgotten, and a 26-page section of color pinups that are all related, like, to every letter of the alphabet. But, you know, it's Richard Sala, so it's all horror stuff. And then there's another 34-page Violenzia Returns story. So you get a 48-page, two 26-page, and a 34-page story, all for $17.99. Richard Sala, Violenzia. I love his stuff. It not only visually, not only the color, but the sensibility of his action heroes, which many times are female. You know, sometimes
so that's a Fantagraphics?
Yes, it is. And it has a spine just like his other books, so it'll go right. You know, his books too are often like off size, and this one is a nice. It's like a little wider than a comic, but a little taller as well. A real nice soft cover, the kind of print that has like a good smell to it, but not too chemically. I love the feel of his books.
I love the smell.
And check this out. In some of his other books, I know I've mentioned a lot of his books in the past, one of them being Cat Burglar Black, which was a story of like a teenage female who goes to like a boarding school, and it ends up being like a school where they're training cat burglars, and it's very entertaining. And even though it has some gruesomeness to it and definitely some horror fear, based drama to it, it would be a really good book for a young teen girl to read too, if they weren't too overly sensitive, if they were cool young teen girl. But my son just mentioned that he saw that book in his middle school library. I'm like, wow, hot shit. Yeah. They got freaking Richard Sala in the middle school 6th, 7th, and 8th grade library. That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. Libraries have come up a long way, man. I think mine was all Dick and Jane through college.
But if you had just gotten the digital Violenzia and were hesitant to order the print book because, well, I kind of read that. This has Violenzia Returns in it, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. Plus,
yeah,
nice
it sounds like
big.
It's pretty packed.
It is, and I love the printing on his book. It's like matte. It's not like glossy. Oh, I love the paper.
So where do I have to order this? Like, was this in stores?
Yeah, you can get it right from Amazon with a nice discount too.
Amazon and their random discounts.
It just came out, and it'll be in my. I actually accidentally double ordered it, one from Amazon and one from DCBS, which will be in my end of the month box. That'll be hitting in a few days. So it just came out a few weeks ago. Violenzia and Other Deadly Amusements. Can't go wrong.
I like that name a lot.
Yeah.
Well, remember, Steve, they're in Canada, so they have Amazon Canada.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Who knows what goes on with that thing?
Yeah, I know you have Amazon Prime, but you can't watch any of their shows. And I'm like, then why would I want Amazon Prime?
Jeez. But you know what? Our Netflix is better because we're getting Star Wars first. So fuck you.
Nice.
Sorry, Marvel is now a Star Wars property. And will only be discussed on Marvel Noise.
Phil, but that Star Wars movie already came out. Came out in 78, I believe. So,
you know, you laugh, but I was talking to someone. They're like, oh, I thought there was only one Star Wars movie.
Oh, that's the Star Wars movie you're talking about?
And I'm like, well, that's pretty funny.
I've met people recently who's never seen it. It blows my mind.
Well, you guys are too...
I haven't seen all three.
You guys are too young, but Andrew and I will remember that that was the... Remember that they held out on that movie, number one, going to any video release, like VHS or DVD, like Star Wars was held off for like a decade. Mm-hmm. And remember, it didn't go to HBO or any of the pay channels. All through the 80s, none of the, it was not on HBO. So the only way you could see it was like when they re-released it in the theaters or looking back at your little photo novel or your Star Wars comics, Marvel Treasury Edition or whatever.
I still have the first edition video cassettes on my fireplace.
Well, yeah,
I wish I could watch them that way. They're not in good condition, though. The covers are all...
So you kept them on the fireplace.
Used.
Because I think we only have the re-edition ones on DVD.
I just bought the Blu-rays, and thankfully, it's not the ones that George Lucas mucked all up.
Yeah. Kevin.
How do you feel about Solar Man and Anim?
I kind of like him a bit here and there.
Okay, I think I can go on a bathroom break.
If Barry Windsor Smith is drawing the cover, it looks great.
Yeah.
Ross Andrew.
Well,
we're dropping like flies. Careful, Kevin.
That's all right. We'll turn this into the Canadian segment. Of course, Barry Windsor Smith, Don Perlin, Jim Shooter. You know, all your usual suspects are involved here. But, I remember, you know, some of these guys started out at Western Publishing. So I think, I don't think I ever gave them the time of day type of thing. I was just like, oh, that seems like a guy that would be difficult to write, like sort of like a Superman problem, but worse, because it just seemed like having control of things on an atomic level, like it would be like you can do anything.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, like, is the universe going to try to eat him or something? Like, that would be awesome. Like seriously, like comics like that, but you know how a lot of people can't write that. So like this, what's neat about...
you know, Kevin, what we need is we need a writer who writes a carnivorous universe.
But
sorry. Go on.
Grant Morrison? Anyways, I saw this on my shelf because I had read the... Like, they put out the first... It's just weird, the format that these comics originally came out in. So they put... Like, they had a backup story, and they put out, like, the backup story that was in the first 10 issues in one volume, and then the first 4 issues in another volume.
Hmm.
Because of the backup story was telling the origin and about how a universe gets, like, royally messed up. And then, like, the guy sort of, like, the solar guy, like, escapes into the Valiant universe proper. So I'm just like, oh, yeah, that seems like a cool story and everything, but still... I guess it's what I expected. And then I sort of get into this Solar first trade here, and I'm like, wow, did they, like... I don't know if you could say they overdid it, but it definitely seems like... Like, it's not a straightforward comic. Like it seems like it has the complexity of, like, the modern era. Like, with a lot of these Western Publishing characters, like, they kept the history and the continuity going, and I'm like, that's way more effort than it seems like publishers would do nowadays. Right. Even like modern Valiance is like we're restarting. Like we have no time for that.
You know, as much as it's scoffed upon now, for a while that was the formula to getting a, you know, an audience to come back month after month. It's like you better, you know, honor and be true to your continuity.
Yeah.
See, I like that way. I miss that
Me
way.
Too.
Yeah. So I think it's an enjoyable story, but part of my fascination was, like, all the twisting and turning they were doing. Like, they have basically, like, 3 Solars or 3, like, guys that could be him or whatever are him, like, in the story. And I'm like, wow, I was not expecting this to be so complicated because you have the original Solar. Like, the Magnus and the Turok characters, like, they're the same characters, but to fit Solar in from... like Gold Key Western Publishing, they sort of have his stories in a comic that one of the guys that will become Solar is reading. So sort of like the Flash type of thing where like, oh yeah, I was reading about you in the comics or whatever. And then they're sort of like unconsciously almost recreating the events that they are reading about in the comic in their own life. And if that's not enough, you have their future self trying to stop like their present day self from becoming like the hero or whatever he is. So it's very strange. So the guy that will become Solar, he like has a Solar guy like burst out of him at some point. So you have future him fighting present day him with, and like one of them is not in a costume because he's just like the scientist. He hasn't become Solar yet. So the Solar that comes out of him is like off on its own too. And you have like these three guys sort of like fighting it out, doing different things all through the story. And like the future him is sort of falling into tropes for some reason. Like he starts cackling like a villain and going, why am I doing this? Why am I losing my brain? I'm like starting to talk like a comic book villain. So it's almost, you know, like that extra commentary, like he's trying to stop himself from being too comic book like. So that's a lot going on.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Are
so
these the ones from Dynamite?
No, this is all Valiant. Classic Valiant.
Let me ask you, Kevin, do you wish that those characters, the Gold Key ones, were part of Valiant, like present now? Like, do you think they would fit in that universe?
Like, ideally, if you would have had them at the beginning, I think that would have been awesome, but I don't think you really need them right now. And they've sort of started, like, introducing characters that are
similar?
Yeah, like, I think Divinity is going to become their Solar anyways.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. It's kind of similar.
Yeah, like, I guess, like, if they were sold off and Valiant picked them up, like, I can't see why Valiant wouldn't, like, for a cheap price or something, like, pick those guys up anymore, but it would be weird.
I kind of wish they would, because I was a big Robot Fighter fan, and
and
Turok I'd kind of like to see in their universe too.
Like, I'm sure they could fold some of them into their universe more easily than others. Like, I think Solar would be maybe more difficult at this point. But some of their characters have sort of taken on, like, aspects of the characters they don't have, like...
But they don't have a dinosaur fighter yet.
Rai's sort of like a Magnus, has a bit
you
of a Magnus.
Dinosaurs? No.
No. Bloodshot. I'm sure Bloodshot in the future is going to fight dinosaurs.
Do you fight dinosaurs? No. Then move along.
Bloodshot's a person, well, anyway.
There, in one of the, like, with the Book of Death where they showed, like, all these, like, future events, Bloodshot is fighting, like, a red-eyed dinosaur in the future.
I am going to pick up that when it comes out in trade, because I'm interested to see the different futures and stuff.
Yeah, like the future, the different future one-shots about how everyone dies were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The main Book of Death book itself, not so great.
Okay, that's good to know. Because that's what would interest me is when they die too and stuff.
So I won't tell you how that ends, but I'm sure some of those things will be showing up again. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in reading more classic Solar now. Like, I don't think it's always going to be that convoluted, but...
Well, Warren Ellis, I think, had a pretty good little run. Like, he did some one-shots and stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know I have one of them.
Because I always find weird stuff, like, there was that... what title was it? Where, like, Steve Ditko dropped in. I think he drew some Magnus issues or something. And I was like, really?
I loved the Magnus and Predator crossover. That's what got me into the character.
Boy, if you get the issue numbers on those Ditko ones, let me know. Maybe I'll try and hunt them down.
Awesome. It's funny. I think I have some... I got a free, like, Wizard magazine, like, at issue 16 or something at Fan Expo this year, and I think the cards included with that Wizard issue are, like, Magnus versus Predator.
You got an old Wizard issue, really?
Yeah, they were just giving out a whole stack, and I'm like, this is going to be funny when I break this open.
I used to like that magazine too, Comics Illustrated. Did you guys ever read that one?
Sure. Yeah.
It didn't last very long, but I used to like that one a lot.
They were fun, as well as Comics Interview and...
Never saw that one.
Comics Review, Comics Journal.
Wasn't there like a Comic Collector or some like low grade
Comic Collector?
Yeah,
but those were all black and white ones. So.
Yeah, I was an Amazing Heroes guy myself.
Color magazines.
All right, how about shooting around the horn and just firing off some of our favorite books from the year, indie books from the year?
Steve, Lazarus.
Lazarus.
Agreed. I didn't read that one, but yeah, I still haven't.
Agreed.
We were going to talk about the latest issue.
Yeah, well, here's That's a good Greg opportunity.
Rucco. Greg Rucco one, right?
Yep, it deserves to be mentioned as one of my favorite books of the year, because it is. Issue 21 just came out. It's from Greg Rucca and Michael Lark. And issue 21 is the end of the first season, if you will, of the book. And it comes back in May, I think. They boasted a big reveal, big change-up, aha, oh shit moment to end the issue of 21. And my first feeling when I came across it was, and you read it, right, Kev?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, they Venture Brothered it. They made it the Venture Brothers.
I'm like, that is so creepy. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that was like the one ending, and then they sort of have the other thing, and I'm like, ugh.
I like how they're getting more information and more progress on the poisoned Carlisle family leader, who's everyone's waiting in bated breaths to see whether he lives or not, because they brought in that other young black kid who was the originally Waste. He ends up being a doctor and being brought in, and he ends up finally having the idea. You've been waiting for him to be the one who has the idea and hoping for him to be the one, since he's kind of a fish out of water, having been brought into the inner circle of these doctors trying to take care of undoubtedly the most important person on Earth. And he finally has his aha moment, which is cool.
Yeah, I just fully expected like one of the families to get just like totally wiped out.
Yeah, well, plenty of time for that.
When you say families, is this like a mobster type thing?
Yes, mob families. Families rule the world, like corporate families. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the lines of demarcation between the territories have all been redrawn based on these families' territories. One guy is the guy who is the head of a big pharmaceutical company. Another, you know, like, so they all came to power in these various ways and own their various parts of the world. But the result is exactly what you said. It's a bunch of mob families are running the world, because that's how it ends up. The negotiations between the families are a lot like, you know, negotiations between mob families and things. Mm-hmm. It's a very clever taking something that's usually smaller scale and expanding it to a worldwide scale mm-hmm. like that.
I thought it followed a woman character who was like an assassin or something.
Yep, and she's the assassin of one of the mob families. A couple of the mob families have shared genetic tinkering information, and they're able to create these hard to kill healing factor, kick ass, super agile Lazarus agents,
aka Black Widows.
Yeah, something like that. Except they can be all cut up and come back and
goth Black Widows,
more as we've seen. So it's intense. It's pretty, but they don't all have them though. And then when they all meet, there's all these scenes as we talked about the last time, where all the leaders are all meeting and having their mob style meeting. But then all the Lazaruses are like hanging out in the gym, like training, waiting for the grown ups, so to speak, the higher ups, to tell them who they have to kill next, even though it might be each other. And they're hanging out and being all cordial to each other. And the way they're all interacting with each other is really entertaining, you know, when balanced against all these worldwide stakes that are happening, and knowing that they might be at each other's throats tomorrow. But today, hey, let's share a drink and you know, compare fighting katas and things. It's a good book.
Yeah. A good back manner in the issues, too. Like, in this one, they went into salamanders. and all this stuff, and I'm like, huh.
All right, so we can't let them team up on us for so we should team up and talk about Copperhead.
Yeah, Copperhead definitely one of my favorites for sure. Although it hasn't come out in a while, it seems, or maybe they took a little break.
I think they're doing the break system where they go on have an arc on and an arc off, so they can spend some different time.
Yeah, there was two storylines this year though that wrapped up.
Yeah, this is the space western set out with the sheriff on a new planet trying to make a living and forget her past type of thing.
And the second storyline was really cool because it was them kind of going into like a big outlaw type camp, like zone, and trying to get their friend back, Boo.
Yeah, who was the sheriff, and they didn't get along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to see what comes forth in the future for that comic.
Another one that was one of my favorites that I know some of you guys enjoyed as well was The Otter and the sequel that came along with it, the Sister Bambi.
Sister Bambi.
Too funny. Mm. The art was fantastic. The again, the sensibilities were outrageous, and the fact that the art was able to back up the sick, twisted, intense vision of the writer and have them work in concert together so well. I just thought it was just such a fun ride, the way that that guy moved around the panels and through his story with his skin flapping away from his structure and his clothes and his cohorts, the supporting cast. It's just unbelievable book. I really got a real kick out of it.
My big one this year, like my top of the stack one, is I'm very embarrassed to say this. It's a guilty pleasure, though, like Zinescope was for me, but Puppet Master is the thing I look forward to every month the most. Wow. And the thing is, I hated the movies. So I don't even know why I love this comic so much, but yeah, it's the first thing I read the second it comes out every month. It's what I'm most excited for.
Mm. One of my favorite books ended this year, Mind's Management.
Oh. Well, yeah, it wrapped up.
Yeah. Like, it had its final arc pretty much this year.
If only Valiant would do that now, eh?
What?
Because he used to talk about mind management like every podcast, just like Valiant.
Well, I can still talk about Matt Kent like every podcast. Like,
well, he's doing Valiant now.
I almost thought you were going to say another book when you said one of your favorite books wrapped up in High Crimes. High Crimes also wrapped up, and I think that was one of my favorite books of the year, too.
Monkey Brain one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, came out with a nice hardcover in the summer, too.
Oh, you know what started coming out in issues, actually, Steve? The one you talked about.
Amazing Forest.
No, the online one. It was a horror comic. Its first issue was like a teacher.
Charlie Wormwood? The Damnation of Charlie Wormwood.
Like, she would have visions of like her eating the kids and stuff.
Oh, yeah. The Eighth Seal.
Yeah, that just started coming out in issues now, so I just started collecting it for my shop, so it's a good time for people to jump on for that one.
That's a cool book.
Yeah, there's been one issue so far. I guess that collected a couple of probably the online ones, I imagine, chapters.
But you're right, Kevin. Amazing Forest did start coming out in print as well.
That's another one I've always wanted.
Captain Canuck got a revival after all these years, and a decent one.
Is it holding up, though? Is it holding up?
It is. It's the best Captain Canuck there's been.
He definitely looks
last
cool.
Year.
it's been almost six issues to boot to date.
Yeah, I only read the first one, but it didn't get me. It's just for me, it seems so corny, like Captain Canada.
I know. How did you ever read those Sidekick issues?
Just the first trade, but I haven't read anything beyond. The second trade, I think, comes out very soon.
11 and 12 just came out. The series just wrapped up
this month.
That's
why it took so long. Yeah, that's why it took so long.
Okay. A very twisted ending. The last two issues kind of go together. Yeah. They take a whole turn that I didn't really necessarily see coming. Not that it was out of left field, but it isn't where I thought things were going to end.
Oh, really?
And you get a lot of revelations and stuff that were it was very interesting.
I'm excited that it's wrapped up then, because that'll be a nice...
Good storytelling, good art from Straczynski and Tom Mandrake.
Yeah, I'll definitely, I'll probably reread the first one when the second trade comes out.
Wait, we got to get real indie here. Anything Study Group Comics? Like Secret Voice or any of their cool stuff that I covered or picked up, or there was like Titan, some other things. They were really good. Like for an indie publisher, I usually don't groove as heavily on some of the books, because like they'll have like all their art comic stuff or whatever, and there'll be something that I'm not into. But all the Study Group stuff, like I'm never disappointed when I pick up their comics at TCAF or whatever. And I think one of them, Zach Sato, has a comic solicited in the latest previews that's like superheroes. I think it's Powered Up, Power Up, something like that, that I'm going to pre-order as well.
For me, from IDW, was one of the best books I've ever read from this creator, which is saying a lot, and I'm not saying it lightly. It's Walt Simonson's Ragnarok.
New issue just came out.
Yes, the second storyline just came out, and there was a hardcover earlier this month of the previous material. Really good book.
You see the variant cover by Art Adams? I think it was issue 7?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
That's the new good one, stuff. Issue 7. And my last one for my favorites of the year, and it deserves a moment of silence, if not sympathy, for the book ending. You know, Dynamite, we talk about it. Occasionally they strike through and have a real cool book, but most of the time it's pretty mediocre stuff. Here's a book that they had a writer who loved the character and who more than joked that he would have written the character for free. And was writing a great version of this character that had been handled very fluffily in the past by this publisher and others. But it's John Carter, Warlord of Mars, from Dynamite, the Ron Mars written John Carter, Warlord of Mars. This was an excellent book, guys. The art faded off as the publisher became less invested with the title, but the storytelling is fantastic. There's 14 issues, and I'm really sorry to see it go. It was genuinely really intriguing, good John Carter stories, and we haven't had that in comic book form in a long time.
Of course, I have to mention some manga. So Knights of Sidonia, they had the second season of the anime on Netflix, and they put out some more volumes this year, which probably enough to do a third season eventually, but I just read volume 14. And with everyone interested in Wars in the Stars, this is my go-to book for that type of thing.
Wait, I thought we were going to team up for our War in the Stars book. G.I. Joe Transformers from 1970.
Yes! How could I forget? That book is Coco for Cocoa Puffs.
That book just had a 10th issue come out, too.
That's still coming out?
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was wrapped up.
No.
That book is insane.
And you're still collecting it, Andrew?
I've moved over to... I don't do the floppies on that, but I love reading when,
yeah,
they're slowly coming out.
Yeah, I'm not doing the singles anymore on that either.
but it's so much fun. Like the trade, that first trade and the free comic book day issue. Like there's a lot to be said for just, I like reading them in a batch because it's so zany, as Kevin puts it.
Yeah. It's a little cuckoo.
I would have thought that that'd be the type of comic you'd want in small doses.
No, I like kind of losing myself in that world, I guess. Well, part of it came with, Godland I read in those big hardcovers, so I guess I'm used to going into those sort of Tom worlds.
I think that was easier to read monthly, though.
In fact, I picked up that last volume, which I still have yet to read. That's something I get to look forward to.
Yeah, it's a cool universe. I've only read the first or two volumes, but yeah, they were good.
So there's like many, many Image books to mention, like the Brubaker books.
Oh, yeah. I could go on with Image forever. But even Dark Horse had some great ones this year, I found. New number ones.
All right, gang. We should wrap this up because it's New Year's Eve real time, and I've got friends and hookers? Family calling. Okay. Jeez, I've got hookers waiting.
Look at Steve just cutting us off. Jeez.
Cutting you off. I waited for the hour.
Thanks for ruining our New Year, Steve.
There was an excellent pause there that I will edit to make longer so people will think it was a long, awkward pause. But anyway. Thanks for collecting at the last minute here and squeezing this one out before the end of 2015. And we promise a new podcast on
January 15th.
By January 15th.
January 8th.
And you can find us our Facebook page or our Twitter feed. And everyone, I hope you have a wonderful new year. And of course, my co-hosts here. Guys, thanks. It's been a fun year. Let's do this again. I think 2016 is going to be an indie year. So let's do it.
All right. No more Marvel. Woohoo!
We still love you, Slurmo.
Later.